Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you with the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio by Lisa Riley, owner of Link Business. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks, Adrian.
So tell us about Link Business. How do you serve folks here in the Valley?
We assist Main Street business owners and lower middle market business owners who are ready to exit their business and move on to a different phase in their life.
So you're a business broker. You help people sell their businesses. Do you work on the buy side as well?
Correct. We assist that too.
How does this work? Let's say I've built an established business. It's a family business. Is that a lot of what you deal with, or does it kind of run the gamut?
It runs the gamut, but we deal with family businesses as well as new and existing businesses. Most often, they've been around for 3+ years.
Give us a typical kind of a profile. How does it play out? Someone's built the business, they've established, been running it for a while, and they decide they want to move on. What are some of the reasons for that, and what sorts of situations are they dealing with when you enter the picture?
Well, most business owners hit that point where they either want to retire or they're just darn burnt out. Either one of those cases are a triggering point, as well as the awful events, such as a divorce or partnership dispute or anything along those lines. But when it's time to exit, it's always best if the business owner has had a plan, because there are truly only three ways to exit a business. One, close your doors and walk away. Two, sell it or give it to your employees or family members. Or three, sell it to a third party.
You know, it's interesting. I never thought about this before, but somebody would be at an interesting juncture in their own life when they're at this point. Often this is a business they've invested a lot of their own time and a lot of their own money in. Mm-hmm. There's probably some sort of attachment that you have, like to a child or a puppy or something.
Correct.
And there's a lot of challenges as well. It's not as simple as, well, I want out, so I'm going to find a buyer, get an offer, take my money and leave. What are some of the things that, you know, as you enter the conversation with people, you start to probably open their eyes to some of the dimensions of selling a business that they hadn't even thought about before? What are some of the common things that you have to talk about right at the beginning of this to even find out if the business is capable of being sold?
Well, we do three things right off the bat. We find out why they're interested in selling and why now. Two, we identify whether or not they do have a business that's saleable. And what that means is, will somebody come in and give you money for your business? How have you built it up? How have you run it? How can they run it and make sure that they make income as well? And then finally, we want to make sure that, A, if they do exit, it's on their terms with the most money in their pocket. And by the way, it does take 6 months to a year on average to sell a well-priced business.
Is that from the point that it's actually ready to sell, or that includes the preparation and...
No preparation included. We like to work with people about three to five years before they're really ready to sell. However, ideally, you should always start preparing on the day you start your business. The next best day is today. And then the third point is about 3 years before you're actually ready to get out of your business.
I imagine a lot of folks end up in those difficult situations where they're pressed for time and they don't always have the ability to do the preparation necessary. Hopefully those are the extreme cases or the outliers. Let's talk about the more typical scenario. So you like to start the conversation with people 3 to 5 years beforehand. How do you identify the right kinds of business owners to even be engaging with so that they know to be building that relationship with you as well as doing the things that they need to do?
Most all business owners are in it to make money. Not everybody does, but unfortunately, we really focus on those who have cash flow, those who are making money on the top line as well as the bottom line. The bottom line is not what it says on your taxes, because we all know your goal is to maximize business expenses and minimize business taxes. But the reality is some of those are non-essential to a day-to-day running of your business. So we go through and we identify those and find out what the true cash is put in your pocket.
You must drive a lot of your business through networking. We met at a Phoenix mm-hmm. Business Journal networking event. When did you start Link Business in Phoenix and how's it gone since then?
Link Business is a franchise, first and foremost. It started in 1996 in New Zealand, and it spread throughout, New Zealand, Australia, the Philippines, and the U.S. I bought the franchise here in Arizona in 2014, at the very end of 2014, and I've been adding agents ever since.
What were you doing before? How did you find your way into this role?
I was working as a business broker for about 3 years prior to buying the franchise. And prior to that, I taught at a university too.
I have a little university teaching in my background as well. What were you teaching?
I'm a sociologist at heart. So statistics and research methods and demography, which we all know what's going on in the world with the baby boomers and the different millennials. So my education has come in so handy.
You know, it's fascinating because if you think about it, a sociologist is paying careful attention to sets of data to try to form interpretations, test them, conclusions, et cetera. Of course, we're talking about human phenomena, so it's a little bit mm-hmm. more slippery in some ways. But there's not a huge disconnect between what you're doing now. You've got to look at the numbers, try to find the reality behind the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And understand some ways to help people accomplish their goals. In sociology, that might mean advising policy or publishing things that will help shape policy. But here in the world of business, you're looking for different kind of outcomes. Mm-hmm. How did your social science background influence the way you conduct your business today?
Well, by looking at trends, I've always been a believer as you, and seeing what's going on. And we all know that the trend is that the baby boomers have trillions of dollars in net worth and businesses. That means that this will be transferred. However, not all those businesses are saleable because a lot of them rely on the owner. One of the things in those 3 to 5 years we tell people to prepare, we tell them to work themselves out of a job. Make sure they've got that management team in place. Following some of these trends, what makes your business more saleable? That's one way. 2, work those personal perks out.
Right.
Get those out. And by following demographics, we also know that there are few family businesses that make it to the third and fourth generation. Now, that's not saying that family business is bad. It's just saying either that the children, whatever their age is, may not be interested or may not be a good fit to carry on the business.
You know, the same thing happens in financial services with people managing the wealth and the assets of families often find that the next generation has a very different vision, very different goals, different expectations, different process. It's not as simplistic as is often portrayed. But you do find that in a very real way, these dynamics play a role. Can you give us an example of a sale? Just give us a real world example, but without necessarily identifying details, where some of these things maybe posed a challenge and how you helped them navigate that. Is there such a thing?
Yes. I'll just talk about one of our sellers was at that time for retirement. In his 70s, and his wife was saying, okay, it's time. His identity was still so tied to the business that it took about a year before we could even disassociate and find another identity before we could even sell it and move forward.
He was unwilling, or what was the real challenge?
It was his life for 50 yeah. years. It was his baby, his business, and for 50 years. And he was the decision maker on everything. Every decision came straight to him, which is not necessarily a good thing when you're trying to sell a business.
Right. What happened? How did you work that out?
We got a management team in place, and he started letting go little by little. And once that team got in and kept it going, and he saw it did not fall apart, he and his wife went on vacations.
Started to taste retired life.
Yes, and enjoyed it, and then decided that, yes, they could leave it in somebody else's capable hands So during this time as well, you know, they were working on their books and records, making sure all of that was up to date, because there's a lot of work in getting that prepared and just making sure, you know, all the dust bunnies were cleaned out.
You know, I imagine somebody who begins to seriously think about selling a business has some idea or at least a burning question. What is my business worth? What can I get for it? And in a way, it sounds like you're not able to really answer that question up front. You've got to do some of the investigation and actually dig behind the tax returns and find out what the actual value of a business is. Talk about that valuation process and how that gets negotiated over time.
Okay. We do provide a complimentary most probable sales price analysis, and it is based on 3 years of tax returns, profit and loss statements, and a current year-to-date profit and loss statement, balance sheet, approximate amount of inventory, and furniture, fixtures, equipment. From this, we can derive a most probable sales price analysis, or at least the bare bones within a range. Now, there are lots of reasons why, you know, that range would depend, and it depends on the type of buyer, too. But we look at the income method, which we just take a look at what the cash flow is and so on, and how they compare with the industry ratios. We looked at the asset with both the tangible and those intangibles. We call it goodwill, but it's things like reputation, location, client list, and all those things that you can't look at and say, oh, that's X amount of dollars. And then we also focus on the market. Just because a business sells for something somewhere doesn't mean it's going to sell for the same multiple or whatever. It depends on if it's a Main Street or a lower middle market business or a public business. They sell for multiples, different multiples. Main Street is focused on sellers' discretionary earnings, what you as an owner-operator put in your pocket, whereas a lower M&A is focused on EBITDA, which is, of course, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So we take a look at that. We find out multiples. We take a look at industry ratios. And we take a look at comps that are out there for businesses that have sold in the same type of industry.
In the same geographical area.
Geographical
as well.
May or may not apply.
Got
because
it.
A lot of businesses are very unique, and there is no national database of sold businesses. These are all private transactions. What gets entered, there are different databases. Sometimes it's a broker database that people enter into it. Sometimes it's an SBA lending, such as peer comps, where all data from SBA lenders are entered. And you know that's accurate. But once again, that's only deals that have closed with an SBA loan.
Unlike real estate, where you tend to have much more publicly available data, you don't have that. It depends a lot on the conditions of those sales. Talk about the buyer side of this for a second. For every transaction where someone's selling a business, there's got to be some entity, person, or organization who is acquiring it. How do you work with buyers, and what's your role on that side of the process?
Well, getting back to what's my business worth, it's truly only worth what a buyer will pay you for it. And so when we work with buyers, we work on the same aspect as we do sellers. We do a deep due diligence dive on the business as well. And we make sure that what's being said and represented out there is actually what's happening. And B, that they are financially able to purchase the business and cover their cost of living and debt load. And B, have the skills to do such. We, knocking on wood right here, there are a lot of seller carrybacks in businesses, just like anything else. And we've all heard the horror stories, but if you do it and prepare it right, nobody's going to default.
How complex are the negotiations around this? Is it a straightforward matter of coming up with a number and finding someone who agrees to the number? Or, as I suspect, there's a bit more human dynamics involved. Talk about the negotiation part of this process.
The price is only one part of it. In fact, the price can go down if the benefits for taxes increase for either party or decrease for either party. So the purchase price may be adjusted accordingly. The terms, you know, is the person, the seller, really interested in legacy and keeping the employees employed there? If those are the key terms, then those are critical in the negotiations as well. Is the buyer a large corporation that's going to come in and just modify and change the whole culture? Is that the type of buyer somebody wants? Some people don't care, and that's okay. But you've got to know what the seller wants, and then you've got to know how the buyer intends to run the business, and you work out hundreds of details and surprises that come up in every deal. Everybody thinks getting the contract and agreement is the step. Due diligence, all the dirty laundry's hung out on both sides. So the buyer better be able to say that, yes, here's the money. Yes, this is what I'm capable of doing. And there's nothing in my closet either.
Right. Just like somebody gets the deal on Shark Tank doesn't mean it actually goes through the due diligence phase. In fact, most don't, or many don't. It's probably the more responsible way to say it. Now, you're also a member of the Arizona Business Brokers Association and the International Business Brokers Association. So you are active in your industry. What are some of the trends and what are some of the things that other business brokers are keeping an eye on? In a way, you might have your pulse on some things, given the numbers of conversations happening by the members of these broker associations with business owners in so many different markets. You like trends. Are you spotting anything? Is there anything interesting happening, or are we in a holding pattern right now?
Well, we are in a seller's market right now. It's somewhat of a holding pattern, but when 2019 started, January 1, the floodgates opened, and two reasons why. There are two major camps of economists and thus business brokers and advisors and so on. One is that we're going to be in a recession here later this year, early next year, not as deep as the last one, but there's one coming. Every 10 years or so, we get hit with one. And the other is that it's not going to be that big of a deal. Don't worry about it. Things are all going to be fine. Depending on who you listen to is guiding some of people's ideas. One market, of course, that always gets hit, and you've been noticing trends in big retail boxes closing and so on, small retail, big retail. If their model doesn't change, if online sales are not included, that's an industry that's having some issues.
Well, for sure, and that's independent of a larger concern about economic trends, because it's clear that the rise of e-commerce and D2C, direct-to-consumer brands, is putting massive pressure on even the largest retailers, the Walmarts and Costcos, et cetera, of the world. Leases in many places are becoming unsustainable given traffic and ticket sales. And in many cases, what we're seeing is the kind of death by a thousand cuts. You know, the fact that so many small direct-to-consumer brands, there doesn't need to be a massive competitor to displace the market. I mean, Toys R Us was not put out of business by the other Toys R Us in the marketplace. How does that affect a lot of the small business owners and independents that you are in conversations with? I mean, they're obviously watching some of this. They've seen the news headlines. Are they adapting their model and trying to build in some new channels? Or are they simply hoping that their lifespan timeline and the collapse of the world as we know it somehow don't line up or line up in a way that's favorable to them?
Both. And like anything else, it depends on the person and what their goals are. There are lifestyle businesses where business owners just own it to live a certain lifestyle, and that is fine unless you're planning on selling. You need to make sure you have a business without the lifestyle in front of it when you're planning on selling. There are people who are watching the trends and trying and getting started in other avenues and just get burnt out. And then we don't have the 2 to 3 years to work with them because they are just done. It doesn't matter, whatever the cost. Sometimes buyers get a good deal.
You've owned this Link business franchise since 2014. So 5 years of pretty strong, happy economics in many ways. I have had a question that I've asked several people, and I'm not sure there's a clear answer, or maybe I just haven't gotten it yet. I'm wondering the extent to which Arizona has some separation from the larger context. For example, we came out of the 2008 recession slower than many other areas. We've also been on a much faster growth curve in the past 5 years than many other areas. I'm wondering if that means we're going to be able to sustain this beyond when a downturn hits some other markets, or if we're just a lag indicator, if you will, of what's happening other places. Do you have any thoughts on this issue? Is there anything unique to Arizona in the national market dynamics?
Two things that are unique that don't necessarily address that question, but others. One is that although there are a lot of native Arizonans, we are more of a transient population than others. And two, for the size of Metro Phoenix, we have a larger number of hospitality businesses and so on, and a smaller number of what we would call the big boy corporate headquarters and so on. With that said, that does give us some changes. Now, with the economy, some people say, well, we go up fast, we go down fast. So one camp is that way.
Yeah. I've only lived here since 2013. So I haven't seen multiple cycles. It strikes me as an interesting question, given nobody's crystal ball is perfectly clear. Everyone who's telling us how they think it's going to go is hypothesis forming. they're guessing. They may be educated.
Everybody's
guesses,
guessing.
Informed by data, informed by history. But we've also seen many pattern-breaking phenomena. Certainly in the political realm and in other many other areas, we seem to be doing things that have not been done this way before, for better or for worse. And the point is not to debate that. It's just different. And at least not in this context. You debate it all you want. We like to say here at Business Radio X, some media leans left, some leans right. We lean business. So from a business perspective, we can't always rely on, I mean, it would be a mistake to think we can predict the future. And having said that, we have to be informed by our knowledge and experience. I'm just wondering, what sorts of conversations are happening out there in the chambers of commerce and in the company boardrooms and in the staff meetings and so on? Are people saying to themselves now, you know, this is probably, we need to sell before it gets lean again? Is there a sense of urgency to this? As it shows up on your radar with the emails and the phone calls and the conversations you have with people, what's the state of the collective psychology here in this market about the future? Are people feeling pressured that maybe they should get out now while they can?
A lot of the longer term businesses, those who have been around 15 plus years and lived through that last recession, don't want to hit another recession. So we're getting calls, lots of calls, regardless if it's time or not. If they had another couple years, they're thinking now on the market, if they can sell it, fine, it doesn't really matter. That's one part. Another part is in most people's, and remember, as human beings, we are truly mostly optimistic that nothing can be as bad as last time.
Right. And then there's some debate about whether the last time was even as bad as it has been. I mean, our memories are short sometimes. At the same time as you might have sellers thinking, I can't weather another one, I'd like to think about getting out, you must also have buyers thinking, man, the last 11 years have been so good and I'm cash rich right now. And I know that some of these things are going to be very attractively priced at some point in the future. Are buyers lining up to begin assessing how to add discounted business properties to their portfolio? We're not there yet, obviously, but are they forward thinking enough?
There are some. But even during the last, as we call it, you know, the Great Recession. A well-priced business for its value, of course, not as valuable as it was a year or two prior to that, but it still was at a fair market value. There are always buyers looking for a fair price deal. In fact, with all the private equity groups out there right now, they have so much money and they're just looking for opportunities to purchase. SBA lending is still very strong right now, which is really critical for sellers who want to cash out at time of closing. They're the competitors. Your competitors may be looking to grow and want to acquire you. You don't want to do it personally by talking to them because they might just take all your clients. But there's a lot of strategic acquisition going on. And the biggest thing right now is employees.
Talk a little about that. What's significant about that?
People are buying companies for their employee asset, not their client list right now, the employees. Getting highly trained, good employees is one of the major drivers of a lot of acquisitions.
Fascinating. That makes a lot of sense, given that the alternative is you're going to less trained junior people entering the workforce, or you're trying to, in some ways, you know, lower your costs by finding highly skilled offshore labor contributions to the business. But yeah, it makes sense to look at an acquisition from the perspective of the people resources that you would acquire. What are some of the other interesting dynamics we wouldn't necessarily expect? And, you know, before we go there, actually, you mentioned SBA lending, and I'm just really not familiar with this at all. So I should ask the question in case there's at least one other person listening who doesn't understand the importance of Small Business Administration lending. How does that play a role? You said that's strong and it's important. What's the role of that in the buying and selling of businesses?
A buyer can get into a business for 10% of purchase price, as long as, you know, there's working capital and so on as well. Now, we all think, oh, good, we're just going to go get an SBA loan. But please be aware, it's got to be, you know, you got to be pretty strong. 699, 700 at a minimum for your FICO score. Additionally, you have to have some transferable skill, if not experience in the industry. And third, the fees and costs are a lot, and it may not make sense for you. So we've heard some banks are a minimum of $250K they'll lend, up to about $5 million. Most banks say, okay, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you're not borrowing at least $300K. The fees just don't make sense. But there are alternative lending sources out there as well.
What are some of those? Somebody who might have the working capital, but is not able to come up with the full price of the purchase. So where do they go? How do they find the financing for a deal like this?
There are some brokers who work with a lot of alternative funds out there, not business brokers, but other funding brokers that we work with, and we find all eight aspects. Now, please be aware, interest rates might be very high.
Right.
Short term, it depends. Bridge loans, all of these things are the critical part.
There's so much complexity in the process. You know, buying a business, selling a business is a time-consuming endeavor. And to add that on top of running the business makes it almost insurmountable. What are some of the services and additional things you're providing in that process? In other words, aside from the fact that for many people, they simply can't manage it alone and they need a business broker, what do they get when they come to Link Business?
All the marketing. And once again, we don't put a big old for sale sign on a business. We have to do it confidentially. And we do both push-pull marketing. So if you have somebody you do not want us to call, we'll not call them and see if they're interested in acquiring a business. All buyers must sign a non-disclosure agreement, and as well as a buyer profile, to make sure that they have the capability to purchase the business. You don't want your business name, location, all that out there if somebody just can't afford it. Secondly, if you're a buyer, you need to be able to make sure that you can afford the business you're looking at. So both sides benefit from that service, and we make sure it's very secure. Then we work with all the way through the process from the seller, from getting the listing, who approves every word before we go to market, to the meetings where we have with the buyer and seller. We're there to make, you know, to be there to answer any questions that we can. But most of the time, we're just silent. All the way through the negotiations, which you do want a third party because you have to work together in the future. A business is not like selling a house. You do not get to walk away, hand them the keys, and go away. There's some training involved and so on. So you want a good relationship. And then all the way through that due diligence process, we have the virtual data room where both buyer and seller documents are in. Both parties review, ask questions, get answers, and get past that, start escrow, and then, you know, all the other work goes. The buyer, if you're thinking about buying a business, go ahead, get an entity. Talk to your attorney, talk to your accountant, get that started. You're going to need it.
In the years since you've been running Link Business here in Arizona, what are some of the things that you have been surprised by as you reflect on, you know, what the idea you had about this? Now, you've been doing some business brokerage work beforehand, but, you know, jumping in with both feet into the deep end, getting the franchise and running it here in this market, what have you learned? What have been some unexpected things or lessons along the way?
We still find some sellers who are doing their own books and records, which is fine, on Excel spreadsheets with revenues in excess of $2 million. We highly recommend them having somebody else take that over. Right. We find that most businesses are Main Street here in the Valley. And most business owners don't have a plan in place or aren't even thinking until something happens. And for lack of a better word, sell or think about selling when sales are going down or they're not doing so well or they're totally burnt out, which devalues their company.
When things are bad, you're overwhelmed and you can't take it anymore is the worst time.
Correct.
To think about selling.
Correct.
Desperation doesn't serve anybody.
No.
Right?
No.
So, you know, aside from telling everybody they should read Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth, or whatever, you know, whatever the current thing is, what's a parting message? What do you want to say to business owners who maybe at some point have had a thought pass through their head, you know, I might want to sell this business someday, but maybe they're not, haven't begun the process, or they're not serious about it. It's not an urgent thing. What do you want to leave them with? What's the message, the lessons, the learning that they need to embrace from your point of view?
Start getting your books and records in order. Books and records are the number one deal killers, regardless. And of all those businesses out there listed for sale at any one time, only about 20% actually sell. So you want to make sure you are one of those persons that sell your business. At Link, we have a much higher closing ratio because that's what we're working for. But to sell businesses, because that's how we get paid. But you want to be one of the 20% that actually gets to the closing table. And 9 times out of 10, that's having good books and records and realistic expectations. Unfortunately, no buyer will buy for blood, sweat, tears. And, there's a lot that we can do here to make it better.
So there's time. You can, even if you don't have a plan, even if your books are held together with, you know, rubber cement and sticky notes, right? You can get this thing on the right track. If you have a viable business that is operating to whatever degree profitably and some future exit is desirable, start the process now.
Start the process and just be prepared because there are a lot of unsolicited offers going out there. So make sure you know what your business is actually worth.
Well, you have this marvelous tool to your valuation tool to help people ensure accurate pricing of their business and at least get a, a good kind of estimate of it. Mm-hmm. Where do people find you, find more information about Link Business and begin that process of exploring this?
They can call the office, 480-686-8062, or we have a national, international website, linkbusiness.com, or a local one, azbusinessforsale.com.
And if somebody's in the market to buy a business, they would go to the same place to find you?
Correct. We are everywhere you look.
That's marvelous. Well, it's a fascinating glimpse into a world where there's a lot of complexity, but it's good to know they have an advocate in you. Lisa Riley, owner of Link Business, thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today.
Thank you, Adrian.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.